It is an honor to welcome my guest this evening, the pioneering scholar of matriarchal studies, Dr. Heide Gottner-Abendroth, on a North American tour from Germany to speak about her newest book, Matriarchal Societies, Studies on Indigenous Cultures Across the Globe. This book presents the results of Heide Gottner-Abendroth's pioneering research in the field of modern matriarchal studies based on a new definition of matriarchy as true gender egalitarian societies. Accordingly, matriarchal studies societies should not be regarded as mirror images of patriarchal ones, as they have never needed patriarchy's hierarchical structures of domination. On the contrary, matriarchal patterns are socially egalitarian, economically balanced, and politically based on consensus decisions. They have been created by women and are founded on maternal values. This new perspective on matriarchal societies is developed step by step by the analysis of extant indigenous cultures in Asia, Africa, and the Americas. Heide Gottner-Abendroth is a philosopher and researcher on culture and society focused on matriarchal studies. She was born in Germany in 1941 and is the mother of three children, two daughters and one son. In 1973, she took her Ph.D. in philosophy and theory of science at the University of Munich and taught philosophy for 10 years there, from 73 to 83. She was visiting professor at the University of Montreal, Canada, and the University of Innsbruck, Austria. She has published on philosophy of science and extensively on matriarchal society and culture. In 1986, Dr. Gottner-Abendroth founded the International Academy Hagia for Matriarchal Studies and Matriarchal Spirituality in Germany and continues as its director. In 2003, she organized and guided the first World Congress on Matriarchal Studies in Luxembourg, the Second World Congress on Matriarchal Studies in San Marcos, Texas in 2005, and a major conference on matriarchal studies and politics in Switzerland in 2011. In 2005, Heide was elected by the International Initiative 1,000 Peace Women Across the Globe as a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. In 2012, she received an award for her scholarship from the Association for the Study of Women and Mythology in San Francisco. Dr. Gottner-Abendroth writes, "Despite all the hostility directed against modern matriarchal studies, it is not possible to disregard its findings. It presents us with a well-balanced, egalitarian, and basically peaceful society. It can exist without life-destroying inventions like wars of conquest and the rule of dominance. This is why I am convinced that matriarchy is needed in the struggle for a humane world." And Genevieve Vaughn, author of the books Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange, and Women and the Gift Economy, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible, and founder of the International Feminists for a Gift Economy, writes, "If in the millennium of women, future generations look back to find the origin of their peaceful societies, they will find that the work of Heide Gottner-Abendroth opened the way. Modern matriarchal studies break through patriarchal capitalist ideology and provide the new old models for viable ways of life, of which our present globalizing market is only a destructive aberration." And another voice from Barbara Alice Mann, Ohio Bear Clan Seneca Associate Professor at the Honors College, University of Toledo, co-director of the Native American Alliance of Ohio, and who has been my guest twice before on Women's Voices, writes, "For decades, Dr. Heide Gottner-Abendroth has worked as a serious scholar on the deep history and ongoing traditions of matriarchy in Europe. Her extensive research has taken her through strong historical matriarchies, both on her own continent and on other continents, drawing together the research of the most modern international scholars on matriarchy. Her book now brings to undeniable light the matriarchal alternatives available to humanity. Dr. Gottner Abendroth should be on the reading list of every woman's studies program. Indeed. So, hello, Haida, and welcome to Women's Voices.
Hello, Janie. I'm glad to be here and can contribute to Women's Voices.
Thank you. We're so delighted to have you. I am, as my guest at long last. And here you are on this tour through North America. Could you tell us where your tour began and where you have been speaking? I want to say at this moment, I know you are in Sebastopol, California, where you will be speaking this evening at Joan Marler's French Garden.
Yes, my tour began in Canada. I'm traveling the North American continent a little bit from north to south. It started in Toronto, where I did two events at the University of Toronto, and then I traveled down to Toledo. It was well accepted at the University of Toledo, and now I'm in California and had several events here at the Goddess Temple in Orange County and at the CIIS in San Francisco, and now I'm here at Jones Place. And I will travel farther down to Colorado. I will be at Lydia Rule's place in Greeley, speaking there at the University of Boulder, and we'll have an all-day seminar and workshop in Albuquerque. And the last place will be Texas State University in San Marcos. And from there, I will fly to the land Colombia, where a small matriarchal conference takes place at the women's village of Nashira, where I have been invited to present as a keynote speaker. So it's a long tour of weeks, and I enjoy it.
Yes, yes. Oh, how fun. You're going to be in Colombia.
Yes, the last stay we will have.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Yeah, it's Angela Dolmetsch there, Colombian mm-hmm. lawyer, who founded this women's village of Nashira and is protecting it. And she invited me a year ago to come there. She told me, oh, you are a mentor of this village. And I didn't know before, but she told me the women try to form their lives there according to matriarchal principles, so I should go there. And of course, I did say yes immediately. And so she brings together a small matriarchal conference, and we will be there in the first week of November, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yes. Now, these women are living in a matriarchal culture.
Yes, these women are not from indigenous traditional matriarch societies. These are women who are very poor, and they have suffered so much from the Colombian Civil War. And I do not know, some years ago, or might be 6 or 10 years ago, Angela Dolmetsch founded this women's village for these women who set up their house, constructed a house on their own, and created the gardens and created some handiwork to live in this village, and they try to perform it according to matriarchal principles, which I think is very interesting. So I'm looking forward to go there.
Oh, yes. I think, hasn't there been a video recently about this village?
Yes, Angela Dolmetsch has videos about this village, how they do their politics, how they do their consensus finding, how they do their gardening, and how they do their social things, socializing. She presented this video at our last big conference 2011 in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Huh. Mm-hmm. If people wanted to see that video, I think I've seen it. It's been going around recently, hasn't it?
I don't know. I don't know for sure, but right. Angela Dolmetsch has it. Mm.
Right. So I believe that it has been around on Facebook someplace. Anyway,
this might be. Yes.
If I just want to say, if people are interested in seeing mm-hmm. it, and it's wonderful. It's simply wonderful to see women breaking out of the domination of men, and so much of that is really violent, you know, and
yeah, especially in this country where so much violence took place, and I think for these women it was really necessary to have to create their own space. They needed it. They had nothing to lose, so they created their space with the help of sponsoring from well-off people in Colombia, and so they started to create their village together with their children. This mm-hmm. village is dedicated to mothers and children.
And to go to the conference, as I recall, is very inexpensive. The fees for the conference itself, I think.
I don't know.
There
are not many fees, not at all. Not at all.
No.
This small conference for these women of Nashira are glad to have some support from the scholars or who want to go there, and so they are connected to a more international network, which is important for them to be supported with what they are doing there.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, you were in Toledo then with Barbara Alice Mann.
Yes, I met Barbara, a friend of mine.
Yes, I've interviewed her twice, and she has so mm-hmm. much to share with us about how it used to be. And her book, Iroquois and Women, the Gandisos, I believe.
Yes, Barbara Mann is such a brilliant scholar, doing wonderful research on her own society, on her own traditional society, the Iroquois. And I think her book and how she does it, this book is not only a wonderful analysis, a very well analysis of the sources, which she reads very critically. It's also it also has a deep spirituality in it. And I think this book is a wonderful model for indigenous scholars to research their own societies. And I think for us, especially for me, who is doing matriarchal studies across the world, I rely on the information and on the work indigenous scholars do. But I cannot research all the indigenous matriarchal societies over the world. I did research in Southwest China with the Mozo, so I'm very grateful and very happy if I can have dialogue and learning from indigenous scholars, which I met from several countries. I met them from Asia, Africa, and of course the Americas, and Barbara Mann is a great scholar in this respect.
You write that non-patriarchal societies are called matriarchal in the new field of modern matriarchal studies. A clear scientific definition of matriarchy has been missing until recently. This led to the misunderstanding that matriarchy refers to rule by women. Could you elaborate on this?
Yes, you see, I got deep into this material. Matriarchal studies started early. It started in 1850 with the work of Henry Louis Morgan on the Iroquois, and in 1860 with the work of the Swiss scholar Bachofen on mother right in the cultural historical area. And then it went on and went on and went on. And when I read all this material, I saw that these people are working, these men are working with not a clear notion of what a matriarchal society truly is. So a lot of prejudices and emotions crept in and distorted the matter a lot. As I'm a well-trained philosopher of science, I know how to set up correct definitions and construct theories in the best way. I thought this topic is too precious, too important for us women of today to be in such a non-scientific way. Why these great scholars collected a lot of much interesting material, but the uncertainty about what a matriarchy is went on and went on and went on. So I started my work to create a clear definition of the society on the four levels of society, the social, the economic, the political, and the cultural one. But this definition is not an invention. I, at the same time, learned a lot from indigenous peoples, and some call their society clearly a matriarchy, and this never was a mirror image of patriarchy. It is a gender egalitarian, very often fully egalitarian society. So I studied it, and by decades of studying these fascinating societies, I could develop the new definition of a matriarchal society, which is at the same time the deep structure which they all have in common, and to give this field of knowledge a new scientific basis on which we can go on. This was my task and is my task. Of course, it's not only creating a definition of the deep structure, it's a huge field of research which came in, and I developed this definition in an inductive way from this huge material I could read and learn about.
Well, what are the identifying features?
Yeah, on the social level, you see, generally speaking, the most general feature is that they are based on maternal values. That means mothers are at the center, so they are based on maternal values. The mother is a prototype of the society, motherly behavior. Maternal values are caretaking, nurturing, peace building, solving conflicts by negotiation, and so on. And the social structures are matrilineality. They are structured according to the mother line. And the clans live, many cases, the clans live together in one big clan house. This is called matrilocality. So by these features, the mothers are put at the center. But the mothers are not ruling. They are guiding their clans without ruling. And they care for their sons, daughters and sons, their grandchildren. It is a relationship society, so the egalitarian way they do it with each other is very clear. There's no ruling in this extended family and clans. And on the economic level, they have a sharing economy. Of course, in the clan, it's gift-giving. Everybody gives its the fruits of the fields or some wages they can earn to the clan mother, and she has the power to distribute. She has the power of distribution. This is an honor, not a power in our sense, an honor. And she distributes the goods which are given into her hands equally to each clan member. And one of the very striking points is how they do their political things. They have a consensus the society is based on consensus building. Which way they do it with clan council, the village council, regional council, and there's no hierarchical structures. Consensus means that the people agree upon each affair which affects a clan house or a village or a region. They have to agree. And this consensus politics is a true grassroots democracy, how we would say it, a true grassroots democracy. And with such political patterns, no gender can rule over the other. There are no classes and no hierarchies. And this means this society makes this society a fully egalitarian one. And the last bit is the cultural patterns. The cultural patterns are based on the concept that the whole world is divine, feminine divine, Mother Earth and the universe as a great creatrix. And so everything, water is a living being or elements in her and on her, is sacred and everything is venerated. And these people live in a way where even everyday tasks are a ritual. It's all ritualized, sowing, plowing, weaving, building a house, all a ritual. And then they celebrate the festivals of the agrarian year. But this is not so separate from their everyday life. Their everyday life is also filled with many rituals. And so I think I call them sacred societies of the feminine divine, which you can clearly see with her spirituality. So, put it very, very short.
To be there.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah, it would be lovely, especially for us women who have not such a nice position in the diverse patriarchal society.
Right, but it would be harmony for everyone. It would be lovely, just...
Yeah.
So may it be so.
I think these social patterns are very intelligent patterns, and they are conforming to the needs we have, to the basic needs. And these societies are... In general, they are need-oriented and not power-oriented. They are based on the needs, and everyone in this network of clans, of villages, cares to fulfill the needs of the others. And then, so they are need-oriented, and this is very important.
It is, indeed.
I think this is a natural way to behave. So I always say this, the kinds of patterns they have are these patterns which are natural to us, natural to women and to men, to stay in such a society. Meanwhile, a society like patriarchy, which is based on power, on suppression and counter power from below, this is not the way human beings, it's not the natural way how human beings can or want or should live.
That's
so
true.
It's a society filled with pressure, violence, wars, and rebellions. This we can see clearly from patriarchal histories. Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
Not a good way to live in this.
No. You know, I've heard about the longhouse and that the sons stay with their mother. Is that right? Although they may go to another clan and have children.
Yes.
And then they come back to their mother
clan.
Yeah,
this is the role of men. I'm very often asked about the role of men. The women stick together in the clan house and on the clan land. They often till, not in each society, but very often they are the agriculturists. They stay in the mother's house. And also the sons stay in the mother's house. They are relatives by the mother line. But when the women want to accept a lover or a spouse, they invite him from a neighboring clan house, and he comes only overnight in the pattern called visiting marriage. In the morning, he goes again away, and the lover or husband is very short. The sexual relationships are free, very free, so he has no rights and duties in his spouse's or lover's house, but he has his rights and duties in the house of his mother. There he is caring together with the mother and the sisters for the sisters' children. He himself regards himself as closest related to the sister children, because they have the same clan name. Clan name decides the relationship.
Yeah.
So he doesn't feel related to his biological children because they have a different clan name. It's when we want to put it in our terms, I say the men live social fatherhood in their own clan houses to their sisters' children.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they would look at it different. They would say, I'm here caring for my closest related children, my sisters' children. It's a kind of social fatherhood, and I think they're very good fathers.
I like it also as a mother of two sons. Children and their mother stay together. They live their lives together.
Yes.
My own adult children just visited, and it was so heart-wrenching to have them leave.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's so unnatural. I said to them...
Yes, it's natural. The mother line is a natural line because the children cling closer to the mother. And in these patterns of matriarch society, they never leave the mother's house.
Yeah.
Go to a foreign house or to a foreign country or a foreign tribe. They leave the mother's house. So it's a relationship society they are. And in the village or in a city, in a neighborhood, of course they have marriage arrangements with other clans. So in the effect is that the whole society regards itself as a relationship with society where everyone is related to each other by birth or by marriage. So everyone looks at the older women as mothers. Each person is mother or sister or brother to everyone else. It's the creation of a relationship with society, which is the effect is it's a mutual aid system. The clans help, of course, the clan members help each other, which is quite natural, but the clans help each other, the villages help each other. So you are in a big net of mutual aid, and nobody can become isolated or starving or something like that. Mm-hmm. All the individuals are included in this relationship society, this matrilineal relationship society, which form horizontal networks to keep the society going and keep everybody safe. In this way, they don't need hierarchical structures as we have them everywhere in patriarch societies.
Right, right.
Patriarch societies, by nature, are societies of domination. And to dominate, you have to create hierarchies. This is what the history of patriarchal states, empires, and so on, monarchies, and this is completely different with matriarchal societies, as I just described them.
Right. I want to say that you are listening to Heidi Abendroth-Gottner, speaking about her book, Matriarchal Societies, Studies on Indigenous Cultures Across the Globe. And then you talked about the raising of the food. And you know, in Barbara Alice Mann's book, she describes, well, actually, she has description that the soldiers of George Washington described in wonder when they came across these amazing fields of corn and the crops. Everything was beautifully done and cared for. And the women did all that, didn't they?
Yes, yes. The women, you see, women and men have in these societies different action spheres. And each action sphere has an economic, does contribute an economic part to the society, and of course it's combined with rituals and so on and so on. And both halves of the societies are completely respected as equal. There's no work better than the other. So, and in many societies, agricultural work is the domain of women, and then men are hunters or do trading. But it's not always like that. It's like that in the Iroquois society, as Barbara Mann described it. When I did research, it was also the same with the Mozo in southwestern China, close to the Tibet border. The women did the agricultural work, and the men went out for fishing and for doing the long-distance trade. But it can also be the other way around. For example, in the city of Juchitán at the Pacific coast in Mexico, it's an indigenous city, also matriarchal patterns prevail there. It's a matriarchal society. There the men do the agricultural work and the women do the trade. The market trade of the city is like a big household where everything is shared, and they do the long-distance trade. It's just the other way around. So these two halves of society are with each individual society. They are clearly separated. Each gender has its own task. But there is no essential notion of what must be women's work and what must be men's work. Not at all. For this can change from one society to the next. So it's a choice they did in that way, from their traditions, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would assume in most of the societies, the care of the children was in the bailiwick of the women, surely.
No, you can't say it like that way, Jenny.
Really?
For the clan lives together. The matriarch, the oldest mother, the matriarch, her sisters, and the next generation of women and men, and the children. And the children are well embedded in the clan. Everybody there is caring for them, everybody. And the children can choose between going to the grandmother or going to the mother and her sisters. The individual mother and her sisters are all together regarded as mother of the children of any child of any of the sisters have. And when the men come in from their work, they are also there for the children. Especially the men care a lot about the education of the boys and care for the boys a lot. So Sometimes I say, we all know the saying, it needs a village to raise a child. We know it. But in practice, in reality, when I saw that in matriarchal societies, they do it that a matriarchal clan in its clan house, it needs a matriarchal clan to raise a child. This is the practice, what they do since long, long time, as long as their societies exist.
Yeah.
And the children feel very happy sometimes. I saw it with the mother. They are not nervous and not screaming. They're very kind and very quiet because they can go to everybody of the adult persons whom they just like to go. So they have a variety of persons who care for them, and the men do the equal work. When the little child is a bit older, then, of course, the men care more for the boys whom they educate according to the maternal values of the society.
Mm.
But I saw also old men carrying babies around, and all this, the whole clan is looking for the children.
Mm.
Mm. In this sense, they do it very equally and very kindly.
So there aren't the horrible things that happen in our world, like sexual abuse and thieving and all kinds of things.
Yes, what intrigues me most with these societies, they don't know violence against women and children. This would be a horrible crime for them. For women and children, are the future of each society, even of our societies, but it is ignored in our patriarch society. Meanwhile, matriarchal societies and cultures are based on this elemental truth that women and children are the future of each society. So it's cared for them. And they are sexual abuse of women or violence against a child is unthinkable for them.
Mm.
This is a group which is cared for most. The older mothers care for them, the older men care for this group, and men in matriarch society understand their role as helpers, protectors of the life givers, and the life givers are the women. So, this is the way they are doing it. We have very nice sayings of the matriarchal Minangkabau about in Sumatra. They say, at first they say, we care for the small because the small can grow and become big, like a rice seedling. So the small is cared for. This is one of their values. And another thing, which refers to men, says men are like a fern leaf which rolls around the center of the society, which are women and children. So this is the role of the protective ability of men. It's nice. These sayings give it very clearly what are their values and how men feel. They feel proud to protect the children of their clan, and they feel proud to be... sometimes they are elected as speakers to the outside world. This is one of the important roles of men, and they are proud to be this, to represent the clan of their mothers and sisters. They don't take their pride from their ego and their own importance. Yeah, it's completely different thinking than with patriarchal men.
Yes, absolutely. It just sounds lovely. I understand that gift giving is really an essential piece of all of this.
Yes, it is. That's right. The gift giving, they practice gift giving economy in the true sense, as Genevieve Vaughan has put it. And gift giving means they give every member of the clan, let's look at it at the economic level, every member of the clan gives the products of their work to the clan mother, it's a gift to her, and she gives them back as gifts to all the clan members, caring that everybody has its equal share. This is a small gift-giving circle. But when you look at the village level, with the different clans, then they have also a way of gift-giving. For example, when a clan is lucky with harvesting or had a good trade and is a bit better off than the other clans, then this clan will invite all the people of the community for the next big festival and giving away its gifts as presents to all the neighbors. at the next festival, another clan will do this, and so on and so on. So with this gift-giving by the clans to the whole community, you create a broader gift-giving circle, which includes the whole village or the whole city or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they do this even on the regional level if they men or women are traveling and they come to a different village or city of their region, and then they will be well accepted from the people who have the same clan name there in this village or city, and they're invited and they're treated well, and nobody is asking for money. It's a society which is flourishing on these smaller or bigger gift-giving circles and is not dependent on any money, as we are. We are a society which is dependent on money, which brings so much miserable situation to the majority of the citizens in our society.
Yes, yes.
And of course, as you just stated before, Janie, if you think of such a gift-giving society where everybody has his or her share, they are not very rich, but you will not find very poor people there. Everyone has his or her well-being. Then crimes of theft or murder because the people are too poor will not take place. It makes no sense there. They don't have this kind of crimes, and they don't have crimes of sex abuse, because of sexual choice and freedom. Both genders have sexual freedom, can choose their partners as long as they want, and can leave them if the love has gone. So why should there be sexual abuse when sexuality is free and is respected and is seen as a big joy of life? It's no suppression of sexuality.
Well, let's go.
Yes, let's go. Mm-hmm.
I suppose they do have fun, too.
Yes.
Dancing, and I would think, and all kinds of things.
Sorry?
I would suppose that they have fun with celebration and dancing and music and all kinds of things.
Of course. Yes, that's right. When you see their everyday and their festival life, they express all their worldview in wonderful dancing, music, celebrations, even in everyday life. So for them, there is no strict separation between hard work, which is alienating and boring. For each work can be combined with a cultural feature like a ritual, a song, and a dance. And at the festivals, they express it all. They celebrate the societal patterns, they celebrate the economy, they celebrate the virtues, they celebrate heaven and sky. And this gives joy, this gives power and energy. And what is very important with the festivals, it is always a kind of new social bonding. Again and again, at each festival, new social bondings or manifesting the old social bonds. This is done in this joyful way. Not
yes.
So I think when you would ask a matriarchal man or woman how she is working, she would not have quite a strict boundary between work and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Work for them and pleasure, work and ritual, work and song is intertwined. And the festivals are they are like the peak of the icebergs only, but the everyday life is filled with songs and all the festivals are only on the top of this wave, but it's going on any time.
Mm-hmm.
The problems they have are the pressure from the outside, the pressure from the patriarchal outside. This is what by which these societies suffer most in their history and suffer most in our days. These are the problems.
Yeah.
I think these societies in itself are very, very stable by this principle to balance everything, to balance between the genders, balance between the generations, and balance between humans and nature. They are well balanced, so they are very, very stable societies over millennia. But the problems are put on them by the patriarchal surroundings.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
We are hearing Heide Gottner-Abendroth, author of Matriarchal Societies, Studies on Indigenous Cultures Across the Globe. Are there many of these societies still functioning, and how, in what parts of the world are they?
Yes, can you give some examples? My studies were cross-cultural research all over the world because I wanted to find out their common structure, the deep structure which is typical for them and at by which you can recognize a matriarchal society quite clearly. So my goal was to find out those societies who keep all these patterns, which I just described a bit. Of course, we have societies which preserve matriarchal elements, some features, but not the whole of the features, the characteristics I described just before. And these are not so many anymore. I give you some examples. I did field work and research with the Mozo. It's one of the national minorities in China. And they preserved the classical matriarchal patterns up till today. And another very famous example, of course, are the Iroquois, the Six Nations of the Iroquois, wonderfully, brilliantly described and analyzed by Barbara Mann. But this refers more to their traditional culture, which has been damaged to some extent by the white. But anyway, I include them because their way of life, their classical matriarchal way of life, had been witnessed. Not in the past, so it had been witnessed, and it is partly revived today by the Iroquois people. Another very interesting example are the Huchitan people in Mexico, and they don't live in a remote area. They live just at the Pan-America Highway in a city, and they manage it to have a matriarchal city. So it's not only about villages and societies which are remote. Another very interesting example is the Minangkabau in Sumatra in Asia, South Asia. They are 6 million people, and they live in a rural area as well as in the cities, in the modern cities, and they share modern life, but even there they go on their matriarchal patterns, which is very amazing. And in Africa we have several of matriarchal peoples in West Africa. Africa has been very rich with matriarchal peoples, and some few have been left. These are the Akan people in Ghana and close to Ghana, West Africa. The most famous of them are the Ashanti, but their culture also has been reduced during the last 10 centuries. Hmm. And
In Africa, right. In Africa, such terrible things happen to women. Such terrible things. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to envision that there ever was a matriarchal.
Yes, the past is long ago, and they have been patriarchalized in history by so diverse colonial forces, the Romans in North Africa, and the Europeans everywhere taking slaves from there, and then the Islamic patriarchalization. So, yes, we know these horrible things which are done against women in Africa, genital mutilation and others. Yes. But when I have a close look to the few surviving matriarchal societies in Africa, they don't know these customs. They don't have it. Uh-huh. It's typical for patriarchalized tribes. And with some tribes, patriarchalization started on this continent very early, and they have cruel practices against women.
Yes.
But these practices are completely unknown with matriarchal societies. For example, I learned it from the Central Bantu. When they do girls' initiation, which is a great festival for them, they celebrate the girls, and everybody drinks a lot of palm wine or whatever they have. and the girl, but nothing is done against the integrity of the body of the young girl. She is celebrated. The same with the Arkhan. Girls' initiation festivals are very important for matriarch societies, and the girls are honored and not violated. Yeah. I didn't find anything of this kind in a matriarch society there, where I did research.
Are there any moves to educate people, women in Africa, about their heritage, their ancient heritage? I mean, would they be open to hearing about it?
Yes, it depends on the region where you are. When you are in West Africa, where these traditions are very, very, very lively, and women have a strong solidarity among each other, then you must not tell them much. They know a lot about this. And of course, you have also good scholars who research their own society. And it's always a fight between traditionalism, which means to keep the matriarchal elements or matriarchal patterns alive, and modernism. And modernism is the thing which comes from the Western civilization and is put by pressure upon them. And then the societies have tensions, and the tensions will come. And what I think, the tiny thing, a small thing I can do with my research, bring to their awareness how important their matriarchal traditions are, that they don't think it's only our exotic old traditions which we want to get rid of it, but to keep their pride on this. When we invite indigenous scholars to our world congresses on matriarchal studies, several of them noticed for the first time that they are not alone with this traditional matriarchal patterns, but that there are scholars all over the world, some all over the world, who have in their societies found out the same patterns. And so it's a worldwide network of matriarch societies which still can develop today. And with these conferences, we tried to bring to their awareness how precious these patterns are for women in general and as peaceful patterns for humanity in general, to mirror them that they can be proud on their patterns. Often, the patriarchal governments tell them they are backward, very, very backward. So, and they should develop into the modern Western civilization. In China, they do this, and everywhere. And we tried to tell just the opposite to them and appreciate their patterns. When I did field work with the Mozo, we told this several times to them, and really it was nice to see how they loved it, to be acknowledged with their wonderful tradition. So, and the World Congress also had some effect. Some scholars from indigenous societies told me after it, oh, it was so nice to meet women and men, scholars from different matriarch societies, and to see that we are not the only one, that this is really a precious, precious heritage which we have.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Just lovely.
Also, the tiny contribution I can do with my work to in this respect. So.
You bet.
Small contribution.
Of course, it's very important. This is the essence of our survival. It really
is. It is. We women in Western societies, also men who don't want to go on with these patriarchal patterns, we can learn from them. We can learn from them a lot how to create social situations, patterns, and communities to overcome all the miserable situations and problems in our societies. We can learn from them a lot. And this is the reason why I dedicated my work to the indigenous peoples. I dedicated my book to the indigenous peoples from whom I learned so much. Mm. Should I read this dedication
to
you?
Please do.
Yes, I would love to do it. So the dedication is, this book is dedicated primarily to the matriarchal peoples from whom I was privileged to learn. Without their wisdom, it could not have been accomplished. And And it's also dedicated to all the matriarchal peoples that I have not named there. There are many more of them. And it is dedicated to all the peoples who still practice certain matriarchal ways. Of this, there are innumerable examples throughout the world. Like, for example, the women's village Nashira in Colombia. This is not in the dedication.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think we need this matriarchal studies, this knowledge of matriarchal societies, if we want to create a new women-centered, peaceful, integrative, and nurturing culture, and overcome all the destruction forces of patriarchy where we are living in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of me wants to say, well, how could we start one here? Or you must have that feeling where you are. How can we rearrange our life to live in a matriarchal-focused way?
Yes, that's a very important question, Janie. And as long as I did this research, women and men were asking this, and I was asking myself about this, and so I have a lot of thoughts about this. These are not only spontaneous thoughts, they are well-grounded in my matriarchal research, and I systematize these thoughts, and I call this field matriarchal politics. Of course, it's visionary, for not much is here for this. So let me give you some small thoughts from this field of matriarchal politics. The first step, I think, is creating communities, especially communities for women with children. So many young women with children are single mothers or have a miserable situation, and this is such an important group for each society, and this is the most easily to be violated group. So mm-hmm. I think it's very important that these women can create communities to support each other. And the older women are very important because they have the knowledge how this community can be created, can help the younger women. And then the next step, men can be integrated who want to live according to maternal values and help the women to have a better stay in our societies. But, of course, a great diversity of communities might be possible to have only women, all women communities or mixed communities. But communities, we can't go on with our atomized life and single life and our extreme individualism. We can't go on in that way. If we want to solve the social problems in our countries, we have to create these communities. And for me, this Nashira in Colombia is a wonderful example. In a country torn by civil war, with so many poor people, especially women, there they created the village, and it's a wonderful opportunity for women to become self-assertive and to survive, not only survive, but to be proud of their new kind of way of life and protect their children, that they can grow up in a peaceful setting. So, this would be the first step. Communities can also be neighborhood communities and network communities, as a great variety is possible. The second step would be that these community build networks of communities which might spread in a region, so that the region more and more becomes based on this community life and not our single life, which is so alienating, difficult, alienated, and abused and exploited.
Yeah.
And I think when region of this kind would develop, they can have all in the region. Their food, they can have even their arts, their handicrafts, and even high-tech. We can have, on the regional level, we can even have high-tech. The problem with high-tech today is that it's a monopoly on it. And if this monopoly stops, regions, people today have a lot of knowledge. On the regional level, you can even produce a high-tech technology which is needed in a region. The next step would be that these regions which might develop in North Africa, America, in South America, in Africa, in Europe and India and what else, should create networks among each other by our wonderful e-media, by internet, so they can share ideas and teach each other how to go on. It's not necessary to create a society, matriarchal state. States from their very origin, the very first beginning, are patriarchal creations and patriarchal hierarchical things. This is state from the very first beginning in history. Matriarchal societies are always networks of communities or networks of regions, nothing else. So the horizontal equality, egalitarian status of individuals, of settlements, of regions can be kept. It never will develop in hierarchical pattern as we have it. So there are some short ideas.
It's good to even, you know, hear it verbalized because it starts one thinking. I can't think of any more wonderful goal to pursue than to create this new old way of being and living that honors life, that most especially honors the sacredness of life.
May I add some short statement, Janie?
Sure.
Sometimes I think when the crisis of our present state on Earth, not only the financial crisis and social crisis, they are always there, but the threatening crisis of the biosphere will go on. We don't have another way than to create this if we want to survive. We can't survive in our way of life as we have it today.
No.
I'm sure. I'm convinced of this deeply.
I agree. Well, we see we're on the edge.
We are on the edge.
In every aspect of life you want to look toward, every aspect.
You're right.
So we don't have time to fiddle around. That's the other piece of it.
Yes. Therefore, I think these ideas, now I call it vision. Some people already do it. And look in the diverse alternative movements they have. In my opinion, they already create matriarchal elements in these movements, ecological movement, the feminist movement, of course, and all the community movement of indigenous peoples. They all have these elements. I think the next step would be that they get aware of it and that they cooperate among each other. Then it can go on quicker. And if the crises come quicker and quicker upon us, this development also will become quicker. And this is the only way to survive if we new old ways create these egalitarian state societies, which are adequate to the human condition.
So grateful for your being my guest on Women's Voices.
Oh, thank you, Jenny.
It's been lovely. And the very best to you and all your work and the continuation of your tour as well.
I want to say I'm so grateful for all the women and university who invited me to bring these ideas and this research there. I'm really grateful. I enjoy this tour a lot, and I hope this knowledge will grow. So I think it's knowledge which is really needed. And thank you to you, Janie, for inviting me to speak here.
You are most welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, you've been listening to Heide Gottner-Abendroth, author of Matriarchal Societies, Studies on Indigenous Cultures Across the Globe.
I walk on the land where I spent my childhood and listen to the wind moving through the corn while memories come flooding back of days I used to know there. And then I know I'm home. My dad farmed the land.
I would drive the tractor and ride my pony Blackie out to fetch the cows. Dad didn't talk much.
We were silent partners. We loved the land.